Hello, I'm Mark Steiner. Welcome back. Good to have you all with us here today. Before we get into our day in history, I want to remind you that support for WEAA is provided in part by AAA Mid-Atlantic. More information at AAA.com/discounts. And very quick run through with our day in history today because we want to jump into this conversation. This is a day that some funny things happened. In 1985, the Coca-Cola Company announced it was bringing back the original Coke and calling it Coca-Cola Classic. But, of course, I stopped drinking Coke a long time ago. That's not true, but I should. But Coca-Cola, that wasn't really the original Classic, because if it was the original, it would have had cocaine in it, and they're not doing that today. So but that's what they said they brought back. They didn't bring back the real original. This is the day in 1991 that President Bush lifted sanctions against South Africa. This is also a day when, in 2003, when Spain opened the first mosque in Spain since they expelled all the Muslims and Jews in 1492. It was kind of a quiet day in history. So I want to jump right into our conversation here so we can get into the meat of what's facing our city. I want you to join us at 410-319-8888. We have here in the studio Munir Bahar, who was on just last week. Or to talk about this 300-man march they had down North Avenue, which turned out to be a 600-man march from Hilton to Milton and back again. It was an all-evening event. He joins us once again. He's an activist and founder of Core Fitness. A march has been much maligned by some, and we'll talk a bit about that on the air too, but more we're going to focus on the violence in our city and what to do about it. Bob Cherry is with us in the studio, who's president of Baltimore's Fraternal Order of Police, Lodge Number 3. He's the head of the police union in Baltimore and a homicide detective, and celebrating his 20th year on the police force. Good to have you in the studio as well, Bob.
Thank you for having me, Mark.
Jason Rodriguez is with us once again, editing and technical manager at dmvdaily.com and one of the founders of the Baltimore City chapter of Cop Watch. And Jason, good to have you in the studio.
It's always a pleasure to be in front of a radio icon.
Dr. Daniel Webster is with us. Thank you. Professor of Health Policy and Management at Johns Hopkins School, Bloomberg School of Public Health. And he wrote a really interesting op-ed piece in the Baltimore Sun about reducing gun violence in our city. And Daniel, welcome. Good to have you with us again, too. 410-319-8888. Are you there, Daniel, yet? I was on the screen, but maybe he's not in yet. 410-319-8888. Write to us here, steinershow@gmail.com. Log on to our Facebook page, or you can just tweet us at Mark Steiner. So, gentlemen, welcome. It's good to have you all here.
Thank you. Thank you.
I want to get you joining in here. Because this, you know, this is not a new story in Baltimore with this kind of rise in violence that's taken place. I think it's 40 shootings in the last 10 days. Do I have that right?
Yeah, just four last night.
It was five yesterday, I think, in Harlem Park yesterday afternoon.
Five.
One incident, right?
Right, and in one incident, but it clearly is there, and we saw this morning that Police Commissioner Batts shook up the command structure of the police department. One of his ways of trying to make an effort to change things, whether that, you know, a lot of city council people were upset about it because they weren't consulted. They were upset about it because they thought it was the wrong time to make changes in the midst of a crisis. And I'm not sure one way or the other whether it would make a huge amount of difference shaking up the command structure or not. That remains to be seen. He's a commissioner. He has a right to do that, and we'll see how that pans out. But I think, Daniel Webster, let me just let you jump in first. I mean, addressing this issue of how you diminish the violence in a city like ours is more than just shaking up the top brass of the police department, even though that does grab headlines.
Yes, I would certainly agree with that. You know, I think we need to sort of re-examine in a very careful way long-term strategies to lower violence in Baltimore. I think we need to look at this with a new, fresh lens.
So what does that mean to you? I mean, I'm curious what that means. What is a new, fresh lens? I remember, you know, we've been covering this for like 20 years now. I've been living here most of my life and was brought up here. So you've seen this kind of the violence in our community the whole 20 years I've been on the air. A lot of things have been tried. What does it mean to try something new?
Well, one thing that I'll suggest is more of a process and approach, and that is to let the data drive your strategy. I don't believe that's really been how the department over many, many years has developed its approaches by and large. I think they've a great deal of thought and insight have gone into thinking about how we approach this, but I don't think that there's been enough systematic examination of how the department deploys its resources and what it gets from those resources. And very generally, what I would in particularly hope there's a reexamination on is how we address illegal drug selling. I don't think there's been a very systematic examination of that. It's no secret that enormous amount of law enforcement resources go towards arresting drug sellers. And I don't know that we've really reaped much benefit from that. Maybe we have, but I would love to actually see data to suggest that. And
data to suggest what exactly?
I'm sorry, what?
You'd like to see data to suggest what exactly?
I would like to see whether how we deploy our resources, the amount, amount of resources and the strategies that are used to address illegal drug selling, what does that actually yield? Does that yield lower crime, in particular lower violent crime? There's been a host of studies over the years in a number of different places, some in the United States, some elsewhere, that have shown on an amazingly consistent basis that very traditional approaches to law enforcement, where you use intelligence, try to figure out what's the organization look like, how do you in essence bring that organization down, arrest people, put them in jail, and so on, that traditionally, those approaches actually yield more violence rather than less violence in most contexts. And whether that's been the case in Baltimore, I can't say for certain, but I do know that we've been examining this and approaching this in a somewhat similar way for decades. And the thought that the violence is driven by drugs and therefore we're going to lower our violence by arresting as many people who are selling drugs as possible as the way to lower violent crime, we can see that that hasn't worked. So I'm just calling for reexamination of how are we approaching this problem? Are we benefiting from the enormous amount of resources we put into it? Can we consider long-term effects of this approach with incarcerating so many people on drug charges? I can understand that in a very short-term, crisis-driven way, it's quite appealing so that the public sees that you're acting. You're arresting people that people view as, and they are, they're criminals. They're committing crimes. But is that really going to address the problem? And I have serious doubts.
So let me turn it here. I get some response because I think that Daniel's piece was thought-provoking that he wrote in The Sun. And I think we are wrestling with how to address this issue in the city. If Neil Franklin was here, he'd be talking about legalizing and drugs and stopping all the arrests. And I actually just texted Neil to see if he's around and want to call in to have his thoughts heard in the air because I think he has a lot to say. But I'm curious from the perspective of two activists here in the community, one who is often very critical of the police and has you have your cop watch going on, and you had this march. Where's the junction between the kind of research and work that comes out of places like Hopkins that Daniel Webster's doing and the approach that you're taking on the street? Is there power in a way for this to work together in a cooperative sense?
Yeah, with the police department, I look at it like this. You have a very strong man, very strong legs, and you put this weight on his shoulders, and he's able to take it, okay, and he's traveling, he's walking. And then you put a little more weight on his shoulders, and he still holds up, and then you put more weight, and then you put more weight, and then you put more weight. After a while, his legs are going to get very sore. And what I see happening in the city is, instead of us reducing some of that weight, we're trying to change his tennis, maybe change his shoes, maybe change the route that he's walking. But nevertheless, the weight, the burden on his shoulders is very heavy. The amount of crime taking place in Baltimore City is very serious for any police department, for any man or woman to bear day in and day out, seeing the amount of guts and blood that is spilt on the street. So the approach that the police have to solve this is really not an internal approach that can really resolve some of these things at the community level. The community is affected by this the most. The community, this is where people have to live. So people, the community members, have to be involved in making the streets safer. And we cannot just look at the police department, because what it does, it alleviates responsibility. If the focus is just police have to do this, police have to do this. Well, what about the community? What about the men? What about the folks who live on that block, who see the drug selling every day? What are they going to do? They have to do something. That's a right. That's a fundamental responsibility as a citizen.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with Mimir 100%. We can't put all of the burden on our police. And they're not being supported 100% by this current administration as it is. I mean, we don't see good morale within our department. You know, we definitely have some leadership issues that need to be addressed. We can't just depend on the police to be that solution. We have to have everything involved, the community involvement, the grassroots organizations, the government coming up with programs or pathways along with us as well. It has to be a wraparound approach. When we constantly say, well, it's the police or it's the mayor, and what we were talking about at the march, the finger pointing, when we start doing the finger pointing, we don't come up with those real solutions. All we constantly just keep doing is finger pointing at each other. We need to come up with some real solutions that, like I said, includes everyone on the table and just doesn't put all the weight on just one particular group, whether it's City Hall or whether it's the police department or whether it's the community. Everyone has to be involved in this somehow.
Bob?
Well, first, Mark, I just want to commend Mynheer for that march. I think, Mynheer, what you're saying and Jason as well is that if we're going to take some of the data that Professor Webster and Johns Hopkins provides us, and if we're going to go out there and support the police and taking, you know, the thugs with the guns off of the street, we can't, you know, do it alone. You know, the numbers and the police alone, as Jason and Mynheer said, aren't going to solve the problem. So, Mynheer, I mean, kudos to you for getting the community involved. I think,
yes.
You know, if anything, you know, let your detractors motivate you to keep doing that. Because I think, again, people who just point fingers, they're part of the problem and they're not part of the solution. And I think that's what you and Jason as activists are trying to do with the city. But to Professor Webster, he talks about a data-driven strategy. And Professor Will, I will agree with you on that, you know, maybe we need a fresh lens. One of the things, and Mark, I think you know this, is that from the police union perspective, we had published a blueprint for improved policing about a year ago.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And in that blueprint, one of the things that we talked about was the crime map of the city. Baltimore City is still 9 districts, so many sectors and posts that are based on a crime map and a call volume and a demographic map that is 40 years old. So I think one of the things that Professor Webster is saying, although I know he's concentrating more on violent crime, is we need to look at where we are deploying our resources in terms of our police officers. I still think the key is not more police in the street. It's a better educated, better quality officer in all areas of the city, depending on where those calls are needed. And let's face it, people see their life through their kitchen window. Folks in Canton who have been hit hard with recent burglaries, they got to step up too as witnesses, members of the jury, to convict those who are committing violent crime in other parts of the city. But for them, let's face it, they're concerned with the burglaries in Canton. Just like folks over yesterday in Harlem Park are concerned about that shooting that left 4 people injured. So as we move around the city in different neighborhoods, Professor Webster's right. We just can't focus on drugs. We have to have a better deployment, and we have to cater to each individual needs throughout those neighborhoods.
So And folks, I want you to join us here at 410-319-8888 and talk about your neighborhood, talk about what you think these solutions are, both in terms of police and neighborhood solutions, if you think there are neighborhood solutions. 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Log on to the Facebook pages. We really want to hear your thoughts on this spike in violence and what to do about it in Baltimore. 410-319-8888, because it's just, in some neighborhoods, especially on the west side, it's just off the hook, as people would say. But one of the things you said, Daniel Webster, that I want to kind of explore, because you just said, what you just said, Bob Cherry, is we don't necessarily need more police. You said we need better police, is what you just said. And we've invested, we've seen, as we talked about the other day, it's in 1991, the city spent roughly $8.7 million to operate 76 rec centers. And we spent that year $182 million in our police department. In this last budget cycle, we have spent $10 million on our rec centers and $325 million on the police department. And one of the things that Daniel pointed out in the article, which I think is a critical piece that we've been talking about here for almost 20 years, is that things like safe streets, that kind of intervention of ex-felons, men and women, walk in the streets as the combination of counselors and people who intervene in violence, working with people that they know, people who respect them because they've come from inside out and have changed their lives and are dedicated to healing their communities. And these are men and women who have been through it. There's not been a spike in shooting in the neighborhoods where Safe Streets is working day in and day out. So what is the policy disconnect when it comes to, you have arguments in the city budget, and this would be a huge argument with the police department, because does it mean that we should be spending some of this money that we use in the police department or some other places and putting it into a much broader program of training and hiring men and women who have done their time and want to do better in society and want to work these streets as another way of approaching the issue of violence in our communities? Go ahead, Daniel, very quickly, and let's go around the room here.
Yeah, Mark, thanks for raising it. So, yes, just to clarify the point, in my column, I was not necessarily saying we need to take a certain amount of money that we're spending on police.
No, you didn't. I said that. That
was not what I was saying. What I was saying is that there are effective policing strategies that have been deployed in Baltimore. We saw actually a quite substantial reduction in gun violence between 2007 and 2009 in particular, and that was a time period in which special detective units were deployed to the hotspots areas, with the charge being you are to focus on gun offenders and illegal guns. Now, you know, I think that what those units were doing varied a little bit, but that was clearly their focus. And my research showed a pretty significant reduction in shootings in response to that. However, over time, I think because of budget cuts, the number of detectives in those areas really were cut back substantially, and perhaps not coincidentally, we didn't continue to see the reductions in gun violence following that. So my main pitch was, let's invest in things that work, and that includes things on the policing side and it includes things on the prevention side, like safe streets.
Right, I understand. And when I was pushing that a little further, which I've been pushing, which sure. I think that you have to reevaluate the size of the budget of the police department. Is it all needed? Is it better spent in other places as well, since you have a limited amount of money to spend? And where you put that money. And you were just saying, Bob Cherry, one of the things you said before you went on the air, and then I'm going to go right to the phones to Linda in Baltimore. One of the things you said before you went on the air was that one of the problems with the special units was the same problems people had in New York, where crime went down, but the interaction of those units with the community sometimes you thought were counterproductive.
Well, I mean, any time the police pull you up, I mean, it's not going to be it's not a situation where it's welcoming. I mean, we have a job to do, and unfortunately we have to, you know, lock people up. I think, you know, the units that were in those areas that Professor Webster is referring to worked incredibly hard, and, you know, they did it for a substantial amount of time. And a lot of these offices, you know, quite frankly, they're burnt out, morale is down, they don't feel that there's enough support coming out of City Hall. And again, I'm not just talking salary and pension, you know, the typical thing that most people think the unions are looking at. I'm talking about, you know, leadership and support, you know, on the street level. And also feeling the support from the state attorney's office, from, you know, the court system. You know, a police officer goes out there every day and every night, and they're charged, you know, with taking the bad guys off the street. They do that for a period of time, and they feel like, you know, okay, how long do I have to keep doing this, and why does the blame keep coming down on me, much like you were saying in there. But what I was also saying, Mark, is, you know, and I agree with Professor – well, I don't agree with Professor Webster on this. I think him and I are saying the same thing. It's not necessarily reallocating money that the police have elsewhere. It's just spending it better. That's where I will agree with him to take the data, redo the crime map in the city, and redeploy more efficiently where the focus isn't entirely on illegal drugs but is neighborhood-focused. And again, you may still have to go after the drugs because if, you know, the burglaries in Canton are being driven by maybe folks who are heroin addicts.
Maybe.
Obviously, you're going to have to go after some of the drug trade there to flip people to find out who's committing those burglaries. The point is we need police officers in uniform who are quality, educated officers who believe in the mission and that can go out there and get the job done, not just with violent crime, but with all crime.
So let me open the phones here, because I just want to push this a bit further. I want you two to jump back into this, because I just think, and I'll push further, whether it is more policing or there are other things we have to do that affect crime other than just locking people up and to address this violence, or how to address the worst actors in the community at the same time. 410-319-8888. Linda, you're on the air. Hi, Linda. Welcome. You're on the air.
Okay.
You're on the air, Linda. Yeah.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Professor Linda Darrell. I'm an instructor at the School of Social Work at Morgan State University.
Uh-huh.
I'm listening to you, and Mark Steiner, what I'm hearing from you is probably more of what we're thinking about in terms of this has to be a multi-pronged approach. Policing is one part of it, but working with community, working with the federal government, providing jobs for the community, providing better educational resources for its young people, providing opportunities for people to do things other than hang out in the street and on the corners. We have to look at this from a more comprehensive perspective. Part of what I do, I work part-time in the emergency room at Johns Hopkins, and it's absolutely horrific to see these young people, most of them under the age of 25, coming in mutilated from gunshot wounds, coming in at DOAs, families being devastated by the increase in crime. But what are we doing other than trying to police the community?
I think, Linda, and I think that we welcome you to come join us some of our roundtables sometimes, and I commend the work that you do in our community. I'm told we have to take a very quick break here. We're going to come right back and jump into our other two guests and kind of pick up where Linda left off, where I left off, and talk about what the alternatives are and how do we get there. I don't think it is rocket science that it can be done. We can alleviate violence in this community. We have to figure out how to do it. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. I'm here with Dr. Daniel Webster, professor of health policy and management at Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health, Munir Bahar, who organized the 300-man march that was on North Avenue last Friday night. An activist and founder of Core Fitness. Jason Rodriguez is editing and technical manager at dmvdaily.com and one of the founders of Baltimore City Chapter of Cop Watch. And speaking of cops, Bob Cherry is president of the Fraternal Order of Police Lodge No. 3, a 20-year veteran and homicide detective in Baltimore City. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Munir, let me let you jump in what we said last and then before we go back to the phones.
So the premise of the 300-man march was, this spike in crime. Okay, what's happening? Who's doing something? I appreciate all of the talk and the dialogue about the strategies, but it's like, what can we do right now without a budget, without a policy, without all this? What can we do? Can we get a large amount of men to come out and make a stand together first? All right. And then the charge from this 300-men march, can we get that same group of men to commit to weekly acts, okay? Well, let's just say very frequent acts of community intervention and engagement outside of the norm, outside of your regular work hours, outside of your regular mentor hours. Can you come out on a Friday night, a Saturday night? We're working now in conjunction with the police department and identifying the days and the times that are most likely to have violent crimes. These are the days and times where we need the community to step in.
Well, let me just push a little bit on that. I mean, I think that's a great idea, and I completely support the idea of men and women taking control of their neighborhoods. And I think that has to be part of what we do. I mean, I tell the story all the time about, you know, my 25 years living in Windsor Hills, which was not a poor neighborhood, but it was from poor to middle class, mostly African-American neighborhood, and the men in the community organized themselves and came out and to stop the madness on the corner. But it wasn't the same kind of madness. It weren't guns. But it was just. But people can do that. However, for it to work long term, it has to be more than the volunteer effort. I mean, we can, because people are busy. They have lives. They have children. But you're not going to have. You're not going if it's not something that is, let's say, like Safe Streets, and you actually invest in that and put more men on the street who really know what they're doing and do the counseling and do the work and intervene. You have to have people who do that.
Well, the thing is, though, as a busy professional, and, you know, I'm a very, very busy person, all right? But there is nothing that overrides safety of my family and my community and myself. Nothing. I'd rather be safe and bored than busy but fearful of my life. So this is a call not as volunteers but just as men, women. This is not about volunteering. This is about your duty to your country, to your neighborhood, to your community, to ensure the safety. Because if people aren't safe, then life is not normal.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me go back to the phones here, and we'll come right back to our guest at 410-319-8888. Linda, we meant to ask you to hold on because we wanted to get your contact information. If you want to call back, we'll get that because we'd love to get you to join us here on air. 410-319-8888. Let's go to Renee in Rosedale. You're on the air. Hi, Renee. You're on the air?
Yes, I am.
Welcome. And turn down your radio so we can hear you, please.
Yes, I wanted to comment on...
Go ahead, Renee.
I wanted to comment on the community effort and also to mention that our church, Life Source...
Okay, and Renee, if you turn your radio off, you'll be heard better.
That our Life Source Church has been going out for the last 3.5 months in various parts of the problem areas. They're focusing mostly on the western area, which has just escalated more criminal activities. Are you aware of this walk that they do? And they have brought out the community, and I understand they're really making an impact.
Do you gentlemen know about this?
Well, I'm going to say this, and I'm going to just be real. All right, I'm from the streets, okay? 13 to 20 years old, I was in the institutions in and out. I am from the streets. I know the culture. You know, I know the lingo. No offense, but, you know, some of the groups that are doing these walks now, there are a lot of older people coming out. There are a lot of women. They're most of the time majority women, majority older people. These brothers in the streets ain't scared. That's not sending the right message. We need to assert ourselves as a very strong and powerful force. The only force right now that the streets are scared of are the police department. Why? Because they come strong. So when you engage in this community, unless you are coming strong, there is no fear. These brothers are not going...
You're saying that the people like what Renee is saying, her church walking and marching, being involved, is not worth it?
I'm not saying it's not worth it, but if we understand... Look, in any war, you have to understand the nature of your enemy. And the nature of our enemy and what we are dealing with, they react to certain things. They do not react to folks coming out saying, Jesus, save you, or pray to us, or assalamu alaikum. Right. You know, or some of these initiatives. This it is what it is. I am from this culture, so I'm speaking as one who is inside. we have to assert ourselves as a very strong force and determined to this behavior, not just for that night. There has to be a culture change amongst the young people in Baltimore. This is what I'm speaking to the young men about inside of the jail. The culture has to change. And in order for the culture has to change, there needs to be a strong, very strong impact.
I do want to get back to the phones here and get to other guests, but I know you have to leave in a couple of minutes, Daniel. So let me ask you to respond to what Muneer said and how what you think how the question of policy fits in to the reality of men and women wanting to take control of their neighborhoods.
Well, I think it's very admirable to have citizens become more involved in this effort. I think the right long-term strategy is a blend of the professionals, those on the law enforcement side as well as on the prevention side, doing the work like Safe Streets. But I also think in terms of sustainability, you have to have individuals living in those communities who are going to step up. Now, the question is, what does step up mean? What does that mean? You know, I must say I'm a little bit concerned about the sort of the war angle or language here. I don't know that they're going to respond in the best way to that. I think that, you know, you have to develop relationships with individuals of trust. And, you know, I think that that's where the focus should be, is there's short-term things that can and should be done. Sometimes I like to think about this in some ways analogous to an emergency response system. So when someone is injured or they have a heart attack or something is going on, you need somebody right then and there who knows what to do. And usually that's not a professional. But we need our citizens to know, what do you do when, you know, there's an altercation, something's, you know, about to erupt. How do you, you know, in essence, try to calm that situation before professionals can come in? Professionals like Safe Streets, professionals like law enforcement officers. So there are a variety of roles that citizens can and should play, and I think, you know, that's what we need to focus on. What's the most effective approaches? But I love the energy and the commitment to change that I'm hearing here. And again, I think you need the right kind of leadership that's going to blend all of these pieces together, the citizen activists, the professionals, and then do careful evaluation. What's working? What's not? And again, that's, you know, as a researcher, of course, that's my bias.
right.
But I believe in it.
But let me go back to the phones here. Come back to our guest. 410-319-8888. Let's go to Jim in Baltimore. You're on the air. Hi, Jim. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hello.
Hi. You're on the air, Jim.
Let's go to Jim.
Sir, you cannot walk the street. Look, for 20 years, when the mayor walked in, I said to him, why do we have 350 people on this corner? And when I asked him that, in five corners in that particular area, there was at least 150 people. Now, they're talking about the spike in crime. The spike in crime is because the only black people that always have a job is a joke dealer. He goes to jail, he got a job. He comes out, he got a job. Now, we've always had a law that says when you're on parole and probation, that you cannot fraternize and you shouldn't be able to stand on the corner with other drug dealers. Now, you tell me why there's a white person that's a police that lives out in the county will come in and risk his life when we allow them to stand on the corners and the white man has put a constitution around. You don't hear people knocking down doors no more, because back in the 50s, when they knocked the doors down, the guys would tell his master, man, they took the drugs. The master said, I'm not going to have to take the drugs no more, so I ain't going to knock the door down to the police and make a ticket. He put them out on the corner, and they've been out on the corner for 40 years. We need investigations of people that come in this community to really protect people. Now, when I was in the service, when blacks and whites in the service didn't sit together, when they went out on patrol, they had a black MP and a white MP. We need a black police and a white police out here investigating so that people will not be taken advantage of. We had 135,000 people one time in this city that was arrested and then had to worry about getting their records expunged. So, I mean, it just goes on and on and on. Nobody's really working on it.
Bob Cherry?
I just want to comment on Professor Webster talking about strategy. You know, he was talking about policing and prevention. But one of the things that we haven't talked this morning is on the other side of that, which is, you know, the state's attorney's office and prosecutions. And one of the things, and I don't know if you're still there, Professor Webster, but one of the things that I'd be interested in terms of the data is, and, you know, I spent 9.5 years as a homicide detective. And for the police officers out there that when I say this, they're going to know what I'm talking about. One of the frustrating things from us on the police end, when you talk about targeting violent criminals and getting the bad guys with guns off the street, like Fred Bierfeld always mentioned, it does no good if, you know, every time you pick up your victim's rap sheet or the suspect's rap sheet, you see, you know, multiple shooting arrests or multiple murder arrests or robberies, but there's no convictions. And, you know, and I think that as we begin to talk about community involvement, that's one of the things that I'd like to see is when you are a member of the community and you're called down to court and you have an officer on the stand, you know, who is looking you in the eye and is telling the truth, and you have witnesses who are courageous to come forward and testify to what they saw or didn't see, you have to step up and do the right thing, and you have to convict these folks. Otherwise, they get right back on the
street. You're saying Bernstein's not doing his job?
I'm not saying Greg Bernstein's doing his job and not doing his job. I think that Greg Bernstein and the state's attorney's office have to be willing to take tougher cases, Mark, if you're going to have our offices go out there and work more hours and target violent criminals, and you expect the community to get more involved.
I don't want to get stuck on this, but I just want to understand what you're saying. So are you suggesting that Greg Bernstein, the state's attorney, is not taking the tough cases, not taking the cases of violent crimes when they're brought to him by police officers?
I'm saying as Professor Webster mentioned about talking about looking at this through a fresh lens and looking at long-term strategies and changing how we not just tackle violent crime, but crime across the city, that you can't just look at data in terms of where to send and deploy the police to make the arrest. You need to look at the state's attorney's office, the federal prosecutor's office. We've been doing that. I mean, the partnership has definitely grown. I mean, without the partnership with the U.S. attorney's office and the state's attorney's office, we wouldn't be where we are today, Mark, in this reduction of crime. What I'm saying, to get to that next level, we've got to work together. I mean, if you look at what they did in New York, Boston, Los Angeles, it's a multifaceted approach. I mean, I think Baltimore is this is something that's going to take another 2 or 3 years. But we can get to where we want to get to in this community.
But
everyone has to be involved, and yeah, it involves Greg Bernstein.
I want to get back to the phone too, but Jason, you've been uncharacteristically quiet. And Daniel, how long do you have with us?
I have about 5 more minutes.
Okay, Jason, then come back to Daniel and get back to these phones.
I'm just flabbergasted at the conversation just keeps coming back around again to policing, and criminal justice system. I just don't see where the effectiveness of that, of those type of policies help our community. I think they really kind of create a bigger problem. I'm just sitting here just absorbing a lot of this in, and I think another concern that I have is that these marches in the community or the churches coming out and reaching out into the community, I'm not condemning what they do. I appreciate them coming out into the community and getting involved in their communities. But we already see that folks are questioning the effectiveness of these marches. You know, folks are saying as soon as the mayor leaves, you know, crime comes right back, or crime is moving around the corner while they're having this march, or while the church is in the community, you know, the crime is moving away temporarily, but it's going to come back into my community. What I want to see more from these groups that are going out there is not this pitchfork and torch kind of mentality, because that's what a lot of these demonstrations that I've seen in the community are really are. You have a lot of, like you said, Mayor, older folks that are upset. They don't like crime in their community. So they come out very hostile, and they come out very aggressive, and they don't come out with solutions or try to assimilate those that are causing the problems in their community. I want to see more groups come out that are willing to assimilate these young men and women into the process of being good community citizens, you know, and it starts with those groups going into the community with open hearts, open minds, you know, open arms, you know, and accepting these young men as they are. You know, don't judge them. Let's try to find solutions for them. You know, I was at a community meet real quick. I was at a community meet one day. It was a bunch of seniors in there. And I stood up at the community meeting and I asked them, I said, how many of you in this room have ever reached out to one of these young men and women and offered some of your wisdom and knowledge that you've gained throughout the years and have tried to assist these young men that you're complaining about the noise and the weed smoking and the drinking and the carrying on in your neighborhood? How many of them have you approached and reached out to them and have tried to instill something different into them? You know, and not one person in the room could stand up and say that they've approached any one of these young men and women. So you can't complain if you're not willing to roll up your sleeves and roll up your pants legs and get deep into what's going on in your community and be involved. And you're willing to challenge these young men and women and engage with them, because that's the problem. They see folks running away from them, and the folks that do come at them are coming at them with this aggressive nature and aggressive attitude. I want to lock you up.
Okay.
I want to get you out of society. I want to get you out of my community.
So on the way to Manila, Daniel, I know you have to leave. So just a final thought to throw out to us about what you're missing.
Well, I think that very good point just made there about how you approach young people that you're trying to change and get on the right path. I agree completely with the points just made. Just to respond to Bob Cherry's comments relevant to prosecutions, clearly we need to have a better response in terms of convictions. I don't necessarily think that all of that rests on the shoulders of the prosecutors. You know, you need witnesses to stand up, as Bob suggested. There are a number of pieces to this. When you do get convictions, you need judges to take particularly the gun and violence offenses quite seriously. There's a number of dimensions to this, and it's not. I just want to say it's not lost on me. It is a component that I've been looking at as well.
Thanks for joining us, Daniel Webster. Appreciate you always be willing to come on the show. Look forward to talking to you very soon.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you. And let's go to Audrey in Baltimore, our next caller up. Audrey, you're on the air. Audrey, there? Do we have Audrey on the air? Audrey, are you there?
Hello?
Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, I just want to make a comment about something. About 12 years ago, I went to a town hall meeting with a girlfriend of mine at Winchester Armory, and there was a commissioner of police and everyone there, and the place was packed. Well, different young men stood up and talked about how they tried to get jobs, and they couldn't get jobs because they were given to other people. Then someone stood up and said, why is it that when we report drug dealing or trafficking in our neighborhood, a couple of days later, the same people we reported will come and knock on our door and ask us, why did you report me? So I just want to hear the comment about that, because I asked my girlfriend if that was true. She said, yes, it happens all the time. When they report someone, that same one they report will come back a few days later and question them about it. Okay,
that's a very serious question. I mean, Muneer, you want to jump at this? And I think Bob Cherry should jump at this too.
I got to say what I got to say. Look, it's not about reporting people or the fear of or someone telling. We are talking about the real-time solution to engagement, to bringing the violence down. And as you know, everyone has said, it's about engagement, not reporting, not calling police on someone, engaging, coming out of your house, young man, what are you up to? Why are you not in school? What are you doing? Can you do this? Hey, look, I have an opportunity. I have a program. I want you to call this person. This type of engage, come on in. I'm going to feed you something. Right. I see you every day. Right. This is the engagement that we need. And the reason, you know, I know the brother said the whole warlike thing he doesn't agree with. Look, it's about not being scared. When you're faced with war, to be successful, you cannot be scared. The officers that are on our streets, they go into these neighborhoods, you cannot be scared. So this is, in a sense, a war. I'm sorry. Anytime children are dying, this is war.
It is war. But the problem is, I hear what you're saying, but I think one of the things Daniel was saying earlier is the problem is if we continue to try to address this as a military issue, it's never going to end.
Well, here's the thing.
So you, I mean, I understand that this, what you're saying, but I don't think that I think that unless it's highly organized, it also doesn't work.
Well, organization is definitely key. And as we demonstrated on that march, here's one important piece. That march was organized by young black men. Young men, most of my team are right. under 25 years old. Mm-hmm. These guys were out there. We were able to control a crowd of 600 men marching across North Avenue. So for the naysayers of the march, did you come out and take a look at the demographics of who organized the march, who kept it in control? Now, these are the same young guys who may wind up on the street or who would have been on the street, you know, moving forward. So the amount of young people that we had come out to that march was a true testament of what we can do. Now, that was a call to men. So young men understood that and recognized that. We are dealing with who is committing most of the crime? Young black men yeah. on these streets.
Bob Cherry, you want to respond to what the listener was calling about?
Yeah, well, actually, if I could get some clarification. Is the caller still on the line?
No, she hung up. But
I don't know if the caller was referring to police going back looking for intelligence after they had made a call, or she's talking about the drug dealers.
She's talking about the people coming yeah. to her. She's talking about the dealers and the thugs coming to her door and why to report
us. I mean, and the only thing I'll say to the caller there is that the good thing with 911 for those folks who are calling in for narcotics or drugs in the neighborhood, you know, you can choose to be anonymous. I think it's not the police reporting to the drug dealer who's calling. I think it's the drug dealers in the neighborhood who are figuring out who are the good folks,
right.
who are the eyes and ears of the neighborhood. When I rip patrol in Park Heights, you know, we, the police, just like, you know, the drug dealers on the street, we know who we can turn to, who are going to tell us who's bringing the drugs in, who has the gun today. I mean, that's just, you know, it's common knowledge. What we want our citizens to feel is that they can call the police and that if they want to remain anonymous and give us those tips, that they can do that. What I would suggest to the caller is that she is concerned with that, you know, to reach out to, you know, the police liaison in that neighborhood or call the district commander and maybe, you know, arrange something that, so that her and her girlfriend feel safe, you know, in the future when they call 911.
Yeah, I've seen that happen personally. I've seen that happen within my neighborhood. I have a block that's split up with homeowners, some seniors, and then we have a lot of Section 8 within our block. And there's a constant battle going on. And then the neighbors get upset when the police come and try to do follow-ups or try to do additional investigation because they really didn't want to kind of be put out there like that, that they were reporting what was going on in their neighborhood. I think that there needs to be a better check and balance with that because there definitely seems to be a disconnect sometimes when we do see the police will go after the one that made the call. You know, and we'll go after them aggressively to kind of get that lead or get that additional information as far as their investigation is concerned. And I think that kind of disconnects the community from wanting to have that working relationship with the police department. So that definitely needs to be fixed. And that's been a problem for quite some time.
410-319-8888 number here. Taheem, you're on the air. Taheem, you're on the air.
Hello.
You're on the air, Taheem. Please turn down your radio.
Yes, I turned it off.
Okay, cool.
Okay, my comment is, you understand, you know, the mayor and the city council need to be petitioned. That's what all this boils down to. Because, you know, you have a mayor that wanted to close down fire departments, certain segments of the police department, and a whole bunch of schools in the city, and this is all Baltimore City. And for what? But, you know, you always call on people in the neighborhood for their engagement. And, you know, it's not, you know, it's not always the right thing to do as far as, you know, call on us when you are not doing right by us or for us. You're sitting in your cushy office, you understand, collecting a paycheck. You're the one that's protected. We're not protected. So
go ahead, Monia.
You know, I'm protected. I'm protected. You know, as an individual citizen, I'm protected. I do what I need to do to protect myself. And if this was the mentality of all the citizens instead of being fearful, apathetic victims. And I'm sorry, Baltimore, right. We have too many victims. Everybody wants to be a victim of this, right. A victim of racism, a victim of economics. We always want to be victims instead of proactive leaders. Now, we are – look, America is great, okay? For folks who want to complain, go to Somalia. Go to Haiti. Go to some of these other third world countries where you're really going to have issues with corruption and government craziness. So we may not have it all together here in America in some of our cities, but we have it nine times better.
That part, though. I'm not talking about that part. I didn't mean to cut you off. You understand? I'm not going into the array or a nationwide array. I'm talking about a sectionalized area. A city. Baltimore City. That's what I'm talking about. That's what you guys are talking about. I'm not talking about America being great and all this.
Okay, so, I'm sorry, we're just about out of time. This is a very important point, I think, we're wrestling with here, and I wish we had more time to do it today. We'll do it another day, though, and continue this conversation. Because I think that it's... I can't even say what I was about to say because it was open up a hole in the bag of worms and you wouldn't have a chance to respond to that I won't do to you. Even though it is the Mark Steiner Show, I'm not going to leave it there so we can come back to this. I want to thank all of you for being here today and all
thank
people
you.
Calling in.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mark.
Munir Bahar, who put together this 300-man march. Jason Rodriguez, who keeps watch of our streets and as the alternative media in this town. Bob Cherry, president of the FOP here in Baltimore City. A 20-year veteran of the police department, and Dr. Daniel Webster from the Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health, who works on violence issues in our city. Thank you all four for being here today.
Thank you for the conversation.
And we'll come back. We're going to switch gears and go to a different part of America that's here in Baltimore, talk about the border between the United States and Mexico, and people here addressing issues of immigrants in those communities. Stay with us. We'll be right back.